This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Do you like the White Sox City Connect uniforms based on the Bulls?
They are very Bullsy. The Black Friday Southside uniforms were great. They were the best in baseball. Why change that?
Now go ahead and ask me whatever you want to ask me, and I'll answer whatever I feel like.
But I know they had to. And number two, at least they're not yellow.
Yeah, well, I think you're ugly. Yellow is ugly.
I wear red, and I look like either
an animal. Welcome to Animal's World.
Or extremely angry. It's just sadly my natural coloring. I would just look like a guy who's really mad at the team, and I'm not going for that look.
Well, if I were a fan, I'd be pissed. I'd be very angry.
I wear it naturally.
But you like them.
It just reminds you too much about the troubles a couple different franchises are having.
It does.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Oh, my God,
yeah,
the White
frustrating.
Sox.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It's a whole new month, a whole new world. We're moving on, Mr. David. We are moving ever forward.
Mayday, mayday. Happy Thursday, Mully. Yes, here we go. April is over. May has begun. I think that means it's going to stop raining now, but I see, according to my weather app, it's a 90% chance of rain, so bring an umbrella.
Yeah, 90 seems like a high
number. 90 seems like a high number.
I don't follow this very closely, but I'm almost convinced that 90 is pretty large.
So does that
mean? It was 100% my whole ride in.
It rained the whole time?
You know, it's funny. It rained on me. Like I got completely rained on until I started the car. And it was as if I like somehow stopped the rain, and it didn't rain for a long
time.
Well,
that's going to be a problem for the White Sox, who have a game planned at the Wright Field.
Are they going to play that game?
I don't think so. Maybe they can give them mercifully the day off.
Oh, boy.
That would be a
dream
by everybody.
Yep.
After another loss last night. Tough one.
Yep.
Tough one. They're all tough.
Help.
They're supposed to play at 1:10 at Wright Field. Sean Burke against Chad Patrick for the Brew Crew. And doesn't appear that the weather wants to cooperate. We'll see. It will be a challenge for the Sod Father. I was out there last night doing the Chicago lead and for CHSN, the Big Pro Football Show. And behind us in the studio, I wanted to turn around. Somebody said, "The tarp, they're removing the tarp, they're removing the tarp." And just remembering the last time they were removing the tarp, I thought it could be for some entertainment. I wanted to turn around and watch them remove the tarp.
Oh, that's beautiful.
But this was in fine shape yesterday. I think today could be a greater challenge.
Yeah, it's if it's 90% chance of rain, likely to
check.
Rain.
Let's get you
double
updated.
Check that.
I'll get you an update because I think it's important to
be difficult.
goodness sakes. Still, yeah. And it has the rain falling on the app now. So very bleak forecast.
The rain's falling on the app. I love that. Yeah. In case we didn't figure out what you were saying.
Update 100%. Mm-hmm. 100% chance. So it will be one of those days. The first day of May, it will get better throughout the month. It will get better for the Cubs today, perhaps, against Paul Skeens. That was a very surreal game to watch with the Cubs and Pirates last night and to listen to here on the Score.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was
jarring,
life kind of shocking stuff, right?
It really was. You had the game, it was unfolding, and then when the pivotal moment in the game, the two-run double by McCutchen, the same sequence of events, the fan fell out of the 20 out of the PNC Park, the 21 feet that is between the Clemente wall and the ground. Fan, you can see the video if you were unfortunate enough to have seen it circulate online, but it's frightening. And yeah, the fan falls to the ground and the game stops, and you could see by the looks on the faces immediately that something was very, very wrong.
Oh my gosh. It was shocking. It was shocking. And
you ever seen anything like that?
No, that's what we talked about when we came in this morning. I can't think of anything like that. I mean, there was a Bears game where the guy jumped to catch the field goal or whatever that
he
was.
He leapt out of
the stands.
Seat. Monday Night Football, right?
Yeah, ball.
And broke a leg.
Did he break a leg?
I mean, he broke a leg.
Looked like he could have done worse, but that was just a shocking thing to see happen. This was so different. It was like a body falling. It was just so chilling.
It appeared, according to the video, that it's a male, identified as a male, no identity and no age necessarily.
Yes.
I have not, that I've seen, unless there's an update overnight, Dustin, but I don't think that there has been. But there's a male fan that appeared to be leaning forward in the railing and then seemed to, it looked accidental. It did not look like somebody who was jumping.
No, it didn't look like
it looked like
he
was accidental.
Jumping.
And then during the fall, there was a flip.
Right. It was just
a somersault.
It seemed like it was like just a body falling.
Yes.
Oh, it was horrible.
And then you could see the horror on the looks of the players' faces, and you could hear it in Pat Hughes' voice.
Awful.
It was one of those things that you'd never want to be in a position where you have to describe. And there Pat Hughes was trying to describe the indescribable, and it was really scary to watch. If you were watching on Marquee, what I did, I was watching on Marquee, and then I saw that. And there was a lot of dead air, and I thought that it was a difficult situation to be in, but I wanted to turn on the radio so I could hear Pat Hughes try to describe it in the best way that he could.
And the Pirates have taken a 4-3 lead.
Well, and I think in this play, Pat, somebody has fallen out of the stands. Oh, my. This is scary. Somebody leaning over the stands in the outfield in right field has fallen onto the field.
No. And the trainers are going to head out. And the body, we're going to get the binoculars on the body out there. What a terrible thing to see. Somebody laying on the ground. And the medical people are hustling. They've got the little flatbed truck to help take this person away. Never seen such a thing run.
No.
Awful. Just awful.
You know, you just terrible.
You're going to put the person on the stretcher. Some medical people are lifting the body. Oh, unbelievable. The players are all kind of on their knees in the infield, hoping that this person is going to be okay.
So that was in the seventh inning. And it muted the rest of the game, obviously.
I mean,
and I can't imagine being a professional athlete or doing your job and moving forward after witnessing that?
I got to tell you, it was hard as just a normal human, as a fan, as someone watching it.
Watching the baseball.
To see something like that happen.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I started getting people sending me videos of it. And it's horrific. Like, you show the guy running around the bases, and then you just see in the background this horrible tumble.
There were different versions of what exactly happened, as one of the texters points out. It looked like somebody might have been jumping up to celebrate the play. It was a double. The Pirates scored to take the lead and then lost his balance, or maybe who knows what the circumstances were. And it's easy to speculate, but until we know, it's not really important. He's in critical condition.
Oh, my God.
According to what the latest report is, he's in critical condition.
That's incredible.
Still alive. And I think at one
point,
we didn't think that at the time.
No, I thought for sure that it just was such a bad fall. And the way he hit was awful.
Yeah. I have to say, Molly, the more you kind of think about stuff like that, and I think after that, it was hard not to think about stuff like that for the rest of the game or the rest of the night.
No, I'm
surprised it doesn't happen more.
Yeah,
I'm surprised it doesn't happen more, because we've been to games and everybody has examples, and you don't have to go very far to find one. The people, I'm not suggesting this is the case here, we don't know yet, but you could see where people might be overserved or having a lot to drink, and then they get animated. When you mix alcohol and exuberance, you don't really have a lot of room in there for caution and for judgment.
Right.
And sometimes when you get so close to these stadiums and I thought last night we're sitting on the fourth level perch in the studio for CHSN. I'm thinking, this is before this all happened. Like, wow, you're up there.
And yeah.
You have to really be careful.
You're not tied in.
Yeah. So I'm surprised it doesn't happen more.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's not funny. I had a friend who just went to the Grand Canyon, and he was asking me about, you know, what was it like when I went there with my kids, because my kids were younger. My wife was so afraid that one of the kids was going to fall in. And you know, we were careful. We had them by the hand, and we weren't peering over the cliff or anything. But there are, you know, you're right. There, like, people, you take a misstep, you stumble, and God knows what. I personally feel such a sense of vertigo when I'm in those kind of positions.
That you stay away from,
that
you don't need me to get close to the ledge.
And I make sure. Yeah. You know, I remember when the cell opened, when it first opened, the seats in the upper deck were, it's like you needed a Sherpa to get you.
It was very steep.
It was a steep climb. You were like, oh my God. Like,
yeah.
You just had this sense that you could fall over. And that made you more careful than, you know, I mean, for me, I was aware the entire time that I felt like I might fall. So I was being, you know, extra careful. But I've never seen that happen. I've never really seen, and I have been to thousands of games and have seen all sorts of strange things. Wasn't there someone at a Bears game that actually fell over a rail a couple of years ago?
That is true. That was an incident at a Bears game.
Yeah.
And you wonder, what will this lead to in terms of looking at, you know, how close the seats are to the ledge and any kind of protective barrier? It's hard to know how to react, but I think they will likely study this, and they'll probably get everyone's attention around baseball.
Yeah.
Because when something like this, the whole league kind of stops when something like this happens, pays attention. So that was in the bottom of the seventh, and certainly the Cubs did not recover from the deficit, and they lose to the Pirates. And so they lose the second game, and nobody's talking about the loss of that post-game. Even the story in the Sun-Times was, from Matty Lee, was more about the incident than it was about the ball game itself.
Everything is about, quotes, reaction to what happened. Do you think they made the right decision to keep going with the game?
I wondered about that, because you have such a profound reaction.
Yeah, I agree.
And I thought that they might consider suspending the game and resuming it today.
Because they had the early start, right? You could pick it up from there and carry on. I wonder if that was ever even considered. I wondered if, because you didn't, they went to break. Marquis went to break. Yeah. We went to break. on the radio, and I never heard either side. You know, did the managers go out and talk to the umpires?
Did you see the look on Craig Counsell's face immediately?
Immediately.
He knew it, he knew what he was witnessing. And I know Derek Shelton came out as well, but I think the first image that I have when I think about this, I think about the look on Craig Counsell's face as he came out of the dugout. And at first I thought he was arguing a call or somebody miss a base or something like that. But then he was looking to the outfield and you could see just such a grave concern.
Yeah.
And that expression is just like, wow, okay, something's wrong here.
It takes everybody's mind away. And again, that is more important, obviously, than the game, but it does definitely affect, you know, anybody's mental makeup, but being right there that close to it.
It is like the finality of death, right? Like when you witness something like that. When I was a kid, I was at a rugby game in Northern England, and I saw a guy have a heart attack and die in the stands about like 10 feet from us. It was one of the most horrific things I'd ever seen, you know, just the way they tried to revive him, what they did, they took him out of the stands, and we were all, you know, it impacts you for a long period of time. That was the first time I saw anybody die, and, you know, I knew they couldn't revive him, but I didn't, like, I was a kid, I couldn't, like, look into what had happened or how it had gone down, but it's just a horrible thing to witness, and you know, I think it's fairly traumatic to have something like that happen, and I don't know.
And that's why I think Dustin's question is a valid one.
Yeah,
and as you're watching in real time, and you're seeing all of the players look the collective look of horror as they got down on one knee and they looked out to the outfield, and you didn't know what they were watching because, thankfully, Marquee and all the TV networks would have the good sense of not televising the attempts to provide medical, you know, care to this fan as he lay there. They could have definitely postponed the game, and I don't think anybody would have minded, and everybody would have understood.
Oh, I think everyone would.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised they didn't. I thought the same thing, Dustin. In real time, I thought, well, boy, they're not going to play this again. They're not going to resume this game.
There are things that are more important than sports, and I think we all understand that. And when that, you know, when that reality bleeds into our kind of fun distractions, it's a kind of a jolting reminder of how difficult things can be for people. And you know, the Bears played a game where a guy had there was a guy from Detroit who happened to be at the game who revived a person that had gone down. A guy collapsed and had like an aneurysm. That was on the field.
Mm-hmm.
They helped the guy, and the guy, they got him to a hospital, and he did not recover. But they helped him. They revived him. They got him to a hospital. All of his children got a chance to visit him in the hospital and say goodbye to him, and then he passed away. And it was like the family was so grateful to the guy that had been there, mm-hmm, and did what he was trained to do and helped that person stay alive long enough for those moments with his children. And, you know, you hear stuff like that, it can bring you to tears because this guy apparently felt like, you know, it didn't work and how awful. And then you get thanked by people that are related to the guy. It just, I don't know. I just, it was awful to see that, and I think you're both right. I think it would have made sense to just sort of stop things there and then come back, but it's just not the way
it was. 2010, I believe, that somebody at Soldier Field, a fan, had fallen by the colonnades to his death, and I think that was
awful.
Unrelated, and not unrelated, but it was removed enough from the game on the field that everybody had a sense of that.
Exactly.
And they could have easily halted yesterday's or last night's game, and nobody would have minded. I think everybody might have been probably relieved if they did that. It was difficult to watch without being, you know, reminded of that or distracted by that, you know. And it was, unfortunately, while we're on, you know, tragedies that you aren't expected, John Elway's
agent and friend
in a golf cart.
He fell out of, Elway was driving the golf cart. Oh. His agent and business partner was with him, fell out of the golf cart and apparently banged his head, mm-hmm, severely on concrete And he died yesterday.
He died yesterday.
Can you
imagine? Longtime friend, Jeff Spurbeck.
Oh, good God.
Was his name. And they were golfing in California.
Oh.
Just like they have so many times before. It was April 26th, last Saturday, 62 years old.
Jeez.
And he fell from a moving golf cart.
Awful.
And another thing that you take for granted that you do or people do,
yeah,
if they're active, if they're sports fans or golfers.
You've done a thousand times.
Done
jump
a thousand
in a golf
times.
Cart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, and I mean, to carry that, to be the guy driving, you'd feel awful. I mean, it's just to lose someone is bad enough, but to feel responsible for it, holy God.
Yeah. So it was a day full of sudden and hopefully yeah, not tragic, but certainly jarring news when you compare those or you compare
awful.
Those two stories together.
Yeah, that was just god awful. And you know, you oh, they lost. I mean, it's kind of it puts everything into a different perspective when you there's and again, the guy, you said the guy's in critical condition. It's incredible.
That was the latest report overnight. I think that was we'll try to get updates this morning. We'll try to touch base with some people who were in Pittsburgh because the Cubs are back at it today. It's the series finale, the pregame right here on the Score, 11 o'clock, Pat and Ron and Zach. First pitch is 11:35 Eastern time, 12:35 there. So it's going to be right around the corner, Molly. So they have to get up and process things quickly and move on because the Cubs have to play Paul Skenes today.
Yeah. Did you see him and Shota? That was so cool. I saw the video of that.
I did not see that video.
Oh, you got to see it. I hope it's out there somewhere. It was super cool.
Two of the best pitchers in the National League?
Yeah.
But two All-Stars.
Like, you know, one power arm, one guy not a power arm.
One power arm, one cramped quad.
And they're holding the ball and they're talking about pitches and the translator is between them, which is he's talking up a storm and showing all these things. And Skenes is like,
is that Shota's thing now? He's going to
pick one pitcher
on an opposing staff each series. Because didn't he do the same thing with Yu Darvish and Otani?
Oh, it was Darvish.
It was Darvish, yes.
It was Darvish.
Because
that's Darvish's thing, right? He throws like 1,000 pitches.
He throws 12 different pitches.
Yeah.
He's got a library of pitches.
It's just super. It's like there's some weird like inside baseball respect thing going on when you're – especially like, you know, Paul Skenes doesn't need to throw a pitch like Shota would throw a pitch.
But every little bit helps. Every bit of knowledge you can pick up along the way.
Yeah, you want to know how you're good? That's it.
It also speaks to what, from a Cub perspective, is a growing respect for Shota Imanaga.
Yes.
Around the league, or at least it suggests that. When you're comparing notes with Paul Skenes and Yu Darvish, you are in a league – that is a very select, you're in select company. And I think that's really cool for Cub fans to see that. So, yeah, that was pretty neat. And I think today we'll see a fun matchup. I we'll talk about it during the pick six. But when you get an opportunity to see a player like Paul Skenes perform, I think that you want to make time for that.
Yeah, I agree. It's well worth watching. He's a pitcher. You know, I mean, is he top five pitcher in baseball?
Yes.
I think he's in that list.
I think if he's not, as far as accomplishments are concerned, I do think he's in the top five in terms of attractions.
Well, yeah, that's what I've kind of, I don't mean the best pitcher in baseball.
No, but
although
you're right.
He's awful good.
You have to name five. If you can name five guys that you'd rather see perform or take time to during your day to reserve time to watch.
Or to have on your team.
It'd be hard to find five guys that you'd list ahead of Paul Skenes.
I mean, like, you want to watch Skubal, you know, if he's pitching.
Yeah, Skubal's got the reputation and the results. Shohei. Are you talking pitchers or position players?
I think pitchers.
Pitchers, okay.
We're talking about for this one.
Wow.
But, I mean, is Garrett Crochet on that list?
Maybe fifth.
Because of what he's doing with Boston right now?
The way Garrett Crochet just approaches pitching is just fun to watch. Give me the ball. I'm going to have this big windup, and I'm going to blow it by you. He just is fun. He'd probably be – that's a good exercise. We should do that.
Yeah, we should do that.
Because I think when you look at – I'll try to come up with a list so we can get to it later, because when you talk about five pitchers –
That you would stop and watch.
How would you rank the five pitchers in baseball? Mason Miller's on that list.
Well, he's
a closer.
Yeah, that's the problem. I'm talking about
starting pitchers.
Yeah.
Okay.
If a guy is starting, you know, a guy is starting
probable pitchers today.
You want to tune in.
Cubs don't have one, do they?
Cubs don't have one. Choda's pretty good, and he's getting to a point, I think. I don't want to call him appointment television, but the way that he goes about it is really interesting. I like watching that guy pitch. If Shota's pitching, I want to be in front of the TV.
That's interesting.
But I don't know
Good company to keep.
Yeah, but I don't know. I know what you're saying. He's a different style of pitcher. But
when I see Paul Skenes today, I expect him. He's probably going to go five innings at least. That's a good start and give up one or fewer runs.
I think you see Paul Skenes today, you better be scoring late.
I'm like, get to the bullpen.
Right? That's it.
Get to the bullpen.
You got to get through it.
Grind out at bats.
Yeah, I agree.
Increase his pitch count.
Yep.
And take your chances.
That's it. All right. We got a lot to go over. We got the pick six next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
How important has Matt Boyd been for the Cubs through the first month of the season? Are there any concerns about usage for Boyd, whose health has limited his availability in the last couple of seasons? Where do you slot him in as this Cubs rotation at this point?
Yeah, I think he's been a huge blessing. I mean, I don't know that you were going to need him as quickly and for as consistent as he's been. He's been very good, and you love seeing the guy take the ball. As far as health stuff is concerned, you gotta just stay with it and keep hoping and kind of line the guy up and just keep him in this spot in the rotation and not worry about it. There's nothing else you can do other than react if indeed something does go wrong. But, every year is different and there are different reasons why things happen, and he's a couple years removed from a serious problem. So you just kind of hope that he's getting better and he's going to have this kind of year, and he's having an excellent year. But I don't know. I think you deal with things as they happen. I don't think you can pre-plan for something like that. You like to have cover. But you've already pushed that, right? Now you're hoping that Colin Rea is a guy that also can hold up and be as good as he's been, etc. The news isn't getting better. The news was pretty bad yesterday in terms of the Cubs pitching. So you just want to kind of stay with it and hope for the best, and you'll react and deal with it if something goes awry.
Yeah, he's been better than I thought. You always like to have a good lefty out there, right? Mm-hmm. And he's I like him a lot. He's good with the media. He's been good so far. Mully, you make a good point about the tread on the tire, right? But again, he's a little older in age, but missing time kind of makes the arm potentially a little fresher. I mean, listen, the Cubs bullpen is still an issue. Even John Heyman the other day with you guys said as bad as third base has been for the Cubs, and we'll get into that more this morning, I'm sure, that the real issue is going to be that the B team, the JV squad part of the Cubs bullpen, not good enough. So you're stretching out your pitchers a little bit more.
He's been as steady as I think you would have hoped Justin Steele would be if he were healthy. He has been very good, better than I expected. And he is your second most dependable starter right now. I would have to say that you have a feeling of confidence when he takes the mound. And he had it last night. He's 2-2 with a 2.7 ERA, made six starts. And he's pitched 33 innings, 33 and a third. Last year, he pitched 39 innings total and made eight starts. So I want to enjoy this without worry. And I think the Cubs are probably in the same situation. But when you look at his track record, you do really, really hope he stays healthy. And you wonder about what happens in another month. Today is May 1st. So we're a month into the season. There's a long way to go. And you look at the last five seasons for Matthew Boyd. 2024, 39 innings. 2023, 71. 2022, 13. 2021, 78. 2020, 60. Back in 2019 is the last time he cracked 100, 185 innings. So there's a long way to go. May he stay healthy. and get the ball every fifth day. I think if he can stay on the mound every fifth day, he's going to establish himself as the second most reliable starter on this team, and he's going to be a big asset down the stretch.
So when you just asked that question, I started racking my brain. Off the top of my head, I don't even know.
That's the voice of Tommy Hotovy. He's with you guys 7:25 this morning. How disappointing was it to see and hear that Javier Assad has been put on the 60-day IL? Does it underscore the fact that the Cubs still need to strengthen their rotation from outside the organization before the season is over? Does the Chris Flexen call-up do anything for you?
Yes, it does. I think Chris Flexen is somebody who, over the last couple months, has found something that has been working, unlike it did a year ago for the White Sox. He struggled a lot last year. He was, at one point in time, making history for going consecutive outings without a victory. Was that, or consecutive losses? I'd have to look up the record for futility, but I think I have forgotten it just because you block out that part of the season. But Chris Flexen is a pro that offers you versatility.
He ate a ton of innings for that horrible team last
year. He did. And yeah. I think that sometimes gets overlooked, Molly, right, because do you hold it against him that his team couldn't hit or that the bullpen couldn't do what they
or that manager couldn't figure out anything?
So I think Chris Flexen is somebody who can serve a purpose in this Cub bullpen that needs professionals to eat innings. I think it's a welcome addition. I think it could be a sneaky good move. So I feel bad about Javier Assad. Certainly you were counting on him, but he's yet to contribute. So it's not as if you're having to take away something that you were counting on. You've really never had it.
I hope it is a sneaky good move, as you just put it, David. That was well said. There was a report towards the end of our show that this was percolating, that this was brewing. And then the question was, first reaction, well, does this have something to do with Shota? And then it was, no, this doesn't have something to do with Shota. So then you wondered, okay, well, what does it have to deal with? And now we know it has to deal with that the obliques not getting better for Assad. And that's unfortunate because I'd have to dig into the numbers, but if memory serves, he seemed like a guy that was able to come out of the bullpen, Javier Assad, and start. Jordan Wicks was a disaster when they gave him the opportunity to come out of the bullpen, and Assad was able to do that. So yes. I was thinking that might be his role when he got back. So I'm disappointed, and as David said, I think very well, a sneaky good move, let's hope.
I thought it was a sneaky good move when they signed him, and I think we talked about this. I also like the idea of a guy doing well at AAA, and you respond to it. And you bring him up. And it's interesting because I heard Craig Counsell speak before the game yesterday, and he was asked about Moises Ballesteros, and it doesn't matter how well he's hitting. They're aware of it. They know about it, but they don't need him right now. And so they're just going to wait. And certainly they're aware. He talked about the fact that there's no opening. You know, there is no need to bring him up right now. But they're aware of what he's doing, and you know, if there is an opening, they know they can count on him. This one's a little bit different. This is an area where they can use some help, and this is a guy that can provide you with some help. So that was good. The Assad thing is awful because that's one of the guys you were thinking about as a replacement player, as a guy that, how isn't he on the way too? They got this, they got that. Isn't he on the way? Oh, yeah, he's got a big start down in Iowa. Oh, he didn't do too well in that start. And then you go another week, and now all of a sudden he's on the 60-day IL. That would tell you, not this year, son, right? He's not really coming back at all. A couple months is a lifetime in baseball.
It is.
And, you know, who knows if he can come back at the end of the year, but that is disappointing that he's not on the way anymore.
Just some real quick fun with numbers. When you look at last year and you're comparing, we're talking about Assad, and we're talking about Flexen, his virtual replacement, essentially. Last year, Assad was 7-6 in 29 starts, and he had a 1.7 WAR.
Right.
We use WAR a lot to measure, according to Baseball Reference. Chris Flexen was 3-15, but he made 30 starts for the White Sox.
Yes.
His WAR was 1.6. So he was a 1.6 WAR player with that record, and Assad was a 1.7 WAR player in his performance for the Cubs, it just shows you that Chris Flexen was a victim of being on a bad, terrible team.
But he took the ball and he started all those games.
And he was a professional.
And he, you know, and didn't he go 14 games without getting a win or something? It was awful.
He was 3-15 overall.
Yeah, but it was awful. He went a long time without anything. And, you know, I can't imagine what that's like going out every day knowing you're done.
Wow. You know, it's a scary good question, right?
Voice of Bruce Levine, he's going to be joining us before 10 o'clock this morning. What did you make of our guy, Bruce Levine, making the point on the Marquee Sports Network that the Cubs World Series window is basically a two-year window? Obviously, Kyle Tucker is up after this year, along with closer Ryan Pressly. But after 2026, Happ, Horner, Suzuki, Tyone, Boyd, Kelly, they're all up too. The Cubs can extend Shota Imanaga after 25. Is this the reality of an expiring collective bargaining agreement?
Yeah, they can extend Shota after 25 or 26, and you know that they're kind of in control of that contract. But yeah, it tells you that they're aware of the collective bargaining agreement expiring. And we'll talk to Bruce a little bit later in the program, and I'm fascinated to get his take on that because I think. You know, there's part of the thinking has always been, you know, 90 wins or bust. This is their year. They got to do it. They've got the certainty of Kyle Tucker for only this year. And even if they get that beyond this year, then you're gonna have to start worrying about some of these other guys. It is there's a lot of guys on the way. They've built this thing up so that you know that there is a whole group of. Stars in the minor leagues, but we know how that stuff works too. Mm-hmm. That's a risky little if come sort of deal, and maybe that's their plan, maybe it isn't, but they're well aware of when the collective bargaining agreement is, and they kind of have set this up to prevent themselves from getting bitten pretty badly.
Yeah, it's a great observation by Bruce. And I think it does make a lot of sense that everybody knew when the bargaining agreement was going to run out. I guess 5 years ago, you didn't know that there'd be a work stoppage. Like they're leaning that way at this moment. They're saying prepare as if there is going to be such a stoppage. But they also created this group together and said, all right, this is hopefully the group of the next Cubs playoff team, meaning Happ, Horner, Suzuki, Tyone, like that first couple of guys on this list, that was kind of that group that you were putting out there to take care of this, and so far they have not been able to do it.
Yeah, I don't agree with Bruce. I don't agree with it. I think 2 years is an odd window size. I think when you look at the Cubs and the way they've replenished this farm system and built it up, you're not looking at this as far as 2 years. I think it's either you're looking at it, go for it all this year because of the Kyle Tucker reality. And then if you lose Kyle Tucker, you try to keep that World Series window open by replacing him with a lot with maybe two players for one and then relying on this farm system you're so proud of and leaning on the pitching that is being developed. A guy like Cade Horton, for instance, that we didn't mention in the previous question, but might be the answer to a lot of questions. So I'm very curious to see, and I didn't see Bruce's report, but the two-year size of the World Series window is a little baffling to me because I do think it's either this year or you take a deep breath, you take a step back, and you retool for the next 3 to 5. And they have a farm system good enough, I think, to make that realistic. The contract realities of Shota and some of the other guys are there, but I don't feel that sense of urgency. What I do think is urgent is the need to win the division, get back to the playoffs this year while you have Kyle Tucker. And then if you're in the playoffs, you have that World Series window wide open because anything could happen in October, and that's the way I think you have to look at it. So if this helps him operate with a sense of urgency, great. I think the potential work stoppage looms for everybody.
That's another really good question.
What did you think of the White Sox starter Shane Smith's performance against the Brewers, the team that left him unprotected in the Rule 5 draft and likely regrets it? Does Smith's emergence make the Sox any more watchable?
Well, I don't know if it does that, but I do think that he is a guy that you root for, you respect, and it makes his starts more watchable. He's clean. He's focused. He is intense. I think that you always find yourself – I found myself last night because of how much we have learned about the changeup he developed, wondering when he's going to use it and how it's going to look. So when you have so few bright spots on a team that's in the midst of another dismal season, I think that you really try to make the most of those opportunities. So every fifth day, I do think that Shane Smith – from the White Sox perspective, is must-watch.
No, Smith does not make the Sox more watchable. I mean, he's fine on most other teams. He looks better on this team. But, I mean, what are the Brewers missing out on? Their fifth starter with Shane? Okay, great.
You don't think they regret losing him? You don't think they looked at him last night in the mound and thought, wow, we could use him?
Sure.
He went five innings. He scattered six hits, gave up an earned run, walked three, struck out four. The Sox don't have much. They don't have great pitching. They've been really solid, and they've done a good job using openers. Obviously, they put the lefty. They sent him back down, the guy that started three of those, opened three of those four games in a row, and now they're playing teams that aren't loaded with left-handers, and they're not trying to match it up and worry about it. So you won't see him for a little bit, but I'm sure that will be back. But Shane Smith has done well, and he's been like a surprise player that they got something free for nothing, and they have three Rule 5 players on their roster. Mm. And you heard the Cubs manager, Craig Counsell, say, well, you know, it's unfortunate about Gage Workman because he's a Rule 5 guy, and it's really hard for a Rule 5 guy to make it on a team like ours because they're trying to win right now. And they're worried only about winning right now. The White Sox are desperate to try to build up a roster and be able to play for a couple of years, and they're leaning on Rule 5 guys as a way of sort of stealing draft picks that went asunder. So they're getting other people's players to try to help develop their team because they failed so badly in previous drafts.
What he didn't have his best stuff last night?
He did not. He didn't have his best game. But, you know, is he worth watching? I think it's great that somehow he developed his own pitch and that changed him and he's had a better year. I like guys like that. I like stories like that. I get it. You can start out and do well, and Major League Baseball will catch up to you because they're monitoring everything and following everything. And, you know, it's difficult to have one over people like he seemed to have with his new pitch, the changeup of sorts. I don't know what you'd call it because it
kick change
ball moves kind of a lot. Yeah, yeah.
Is that what they're calling it?
I think that's what they're calling it.
That's the cool kids are calling it.
And that's fine, you know, whatever you want to call it. But he did that himself. And now help him out and help him adjust, and let's see what he can do. It's a, you know, it was a really good guy to pick up, and they needed him, and he's proven to be pretty good for them.
Did you hear him talk about meeting the scout or being reunited with the scout from Milwaukee that signed him essentially? So that had to be a cool full circle moment
for
the guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, they're losing games not because of the starting pitching. They're losing games because they can't score runs. And they finally scored four runs, and it's just not enough against a team like Milwaukee that can nickel and dime you to death. And that's kind of what happened in the game.
There's going to be a lot of questions on the draft process.
What did you make of the Falcons defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich's apology yesterday over his son Jack Crank Call to Shedeur Sanders during the NFL draft? The Falcons, they were fined $250,000 yesterday, while Ulbrich, the father, was fined $100,000 for the incident. The DC said they won't appeal the fine. He takes full responsibility for not protecting the phone numbers. Teaching moment?
Oh, boy. That's a tough moment, man. Right? Do we agree on that? That's awful. $100,000 is a lot of money to people. I don't know how you could not look at it and say you know, why don't you suspend me a week so I can stay home and just discipline my son? We could, you know, really have a serious conversation, and you're grounded for life. And, you know, $100,000, man. I couldn't imagine what the old man would have done if I had gotten caught with a prank like that. You know, it was Jeff Ulbrich apologized for leaving the material available to a point where it was stolen by his son, and said he's not going to. They said they apologize for everything, and they're not challenging it, or they won't try to appeal any part of it. They're going to pay the price and do what they need to do. Did you see that apparently somebody called Abdul Carter? That story came out. He was called when Jacksonville was trading up.
Yeah, there were a couple other prospects, too.
At least four people that I've heard of that were also called. So whatever they were doing, they fouled it up. And if this kid was responsible for all that, then the old man should pay up and just let it go. But if I'm Jax Ulbrich, holy cow, just keep your head down, son, and go to the clean and narrow. And the guy, talk about pranks going wrong. It's a cautionary tale.
Cautionary tale is a good way to talk about it. You know, keep your head down, another great way to put it. But is this, again, you guys mentioned these other stories. What's not crystal clear, was this different cases? Were these his buddies? Were, you know, but it goes back to, like, it's all about Shedeur Sanders again. You know, and it, like, he had this, if you took Shedeur Sanders out of the equation and three other guys got calls, would we be asking this question today? Would there be fines?
Oh, yes, of course there would be. Yeah,
but, would there be?
Yes, there would be.
But that guy fell at a historic level, right?
So I understand. I guess.
But I think you can't take Shedeur out of it, is what I'm saying, because that is the one that it wasn't just like, hey, you're going for, you know, you're going one spot later or you're going three spots. That guy fell rounds. It's awful.
Well, there was more attention paid because it was Shedeur Sanders, but let's be clear about the fine is because this was an exposure of private information.
Personal information, yes, being shared.
And maybe proprietary information as well. So you can't tolerate that from a league level, from a team level. And so you have to discipline. Once this becomes well known and the act was performed, the hoax was attempted and pulled off, that the other things are interesting, but those are if those are situations where somebody got the information or the numbers from a NFL team's personal computer, then they need to find those teams too.
Yeah.
Find those families too. Jeff Ulbrich did what any dad would have to do. He faced this publicly, and he looked like he was humiliated. And
yes,
you understand that. And it was a tough dad moment. It's been a tough week for sports dads, from Halliburton's pops to Jeff Ulbrich having to take ownership for his son. This is a difficult thing because a lot of people say, well, you know, the dad has as much to do with it as the son because there must not have been some discipline. He left his computer open. And those things are true. So this is a very tough lesson to learn. The young man costing his dad $100,000. I would put him on a repayment plan similar to your student loans.
Wow.
Your own personal in-family Sally Mae, because he can pay that off 1 month at a time for a very long time.
When will we find out about any discipline or fine for that incident the other night down in Indiana?
Halliburton.
I don't know. Like, what would happen? What would they do?
How do you discipline them?
Oh, I mean, no longer allowed to sit that close. Not allowed in the building.
Oh, you mean the next playoff game?
Right. I mean, no more courtside seat.
Yeah. Are you going to tell the father of your best player, your franchise player, that he can't go to the game?
Why I find it so interesting.
Move him. You have to move him off the court seats into the first row.
He's got to watch the game.
Yeah, so he has to be put in a suite
in Bloomington.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
All right, sorry guys, I went a little out of order here. After the Bears draft, how would you compare their offensive weapons to other teams in the NFC North, and how much have they closed the gap? Who was the best collection and why?
They've closed the gap. They have closed the gap. You add you had players of the caliber potentially of Loveland and Burden.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have added two Pro Bowl caliber talents. Can they realize their potential in Ben Johnson's offense? It's a good bet that they will, and if they do, they will give the Bears a legitimate offense, a passing offense to be feared. Yes, to be feared. They're not the Vikings. I think the Vikings have the best collection. I think because of Justin Jefferson, because of Jordan Addison, I think they have the best receiver tandem. Then you throw in the tight end, and it's very dangerous. I think Detroit could make that argument as well. The Bears are in that category. I think the interesting thing when you examine where the NFC North is in terms of weaponry, the Packers, to me, are last. Now, Christian Watson has to get healthy, and maybe when he does, that will be different. And I know they drafted Golden out of Texas, who made his long walk to the podium, and it was everything's green and golden. I know those are fun headlines to write, but I don't think that their weaponry is as good as the rest of the divisions. So the Bears put themselves in a position to be to have an offense that is feared. It's not the Vikings yet, but it is definitely improved.
Definitely improved. The gap has been closed. This is not your dad's or grandfather's black and blue division anymore, that's for sure. The rough and tumble NFC North. I guess it looks good on paper. It looks good in fantasy football. But what matters is wins and losses, and that's where we've got to see if the gap's been closed.
You know, I think it's fascinating to talk about this because I think that I think maybe Detroit has the best. They had the best offense. I guess what I'm saying is, are we not counting the offensive line? We're talking about weaponry, so we're only talking about receivers and running backs. And
yes,
but I think their offensive line makes the running back better.
What about play
and
callers?
It makes Jared Goff better. I think if you are right now, just think of it this way. If you're judging the quarterbacks, I think you would go you would probably go Jared Goff, Jordan Love, Caleb Williams, J.J. McCarthy, just because we haven't seen anything from J.J. And we're hopeful about Caleb Williams. But I don't know that he's jumping the other two this year, even with Ben Johnson and his offense. I think if you're looking at it through a lens of the running back, the answer is different. I think that all of a sudden the Vikings might, the former Packer running back, might Aaron Jones. It could be that you're thinking, well, you know, Josh Jacobs had the best year last year. Jahmyr Gibbs and Montgomery are kind of a 1-2 punch. Then is it DeAndre Swift and a seventh round? I think when you start with the offensive line, the quarterback, and you get to the running back. As far as receivers are concerned, I think the Bears, they as good as they are, they don't have Justin Jefferson. And I think that the Bears, as good as they are, they have yet to prove, and they have an Amon-Ra St. Brown. So I think DJ Moore probably fits in behind those other two guys. And is he the best receiver on the Bears?
That's probably a good argument,
right
though.
Now. And then
Justin Jefferson, there's no argument.
You look at Christian Watson. No, there's no argument.
He's the best. After that, it gets interesting.
Well, I think it's Amon-Ra St. Brown because he's made two consecutive Pro Bowls.
I know. It's a great system.
Ahead of DJ Moore.
How will he be without Ben Johnson?
Yeah, it's a great question.
And how much has he benefited from that offensive line,
David,
as you point out?
I totally agree with that, but I'm saying we have to judge this not by what the future may hold, but by, you know, what is going on right now. And frankly, I would say the second best wide receiver is probably it's probably Jordan Addison.
Ooh,
you know, I'm just saying he's probably ahead of Romeo Doubs, who is ahead of who is the Bears' second receiver. Are we gonna say it's Luther Burden, or are we saying
it's Rome?
It's Rome Odunze. Rome's done nothing thus far.
I agree with that.
No offense to anyone. And then, as far as your tight ends are concerned, you know. I know Sam Laporte is great. You know, T.J. Hockenson has had a really good run, and he's done well for himself. So that's not as is obvious. I think the Bears have a way to go. I think they're third, if I'm judging it right now, based on previous seasons. Now, you know, third with a bullet, right? Because they got the play caller from the first one. But that's the way I judge it. All right. We got the extra point next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
What do we expect from the Cubs offense today against the Pirates' ace, Paul Skenes, in a strength-on-strength matchup against one of the best young starters in baseball? What's the key for the Cubs hitters against Skenes?
The key is to make him throw as many pitches as possible. The key is to try to just make contact. The key is to make him rattled as much as you can. I don't know that they're going to face many pitchers this year any tougher than Paul Skenes. I'm not quite sure why Dustin doesn't have a modicum of respect for him. I'm not quite sure why there would be any reason to to go into this matchup without anything but that feeling. Because Paul Skenes is one of the best young pitchers in baseball. The Cubs have a tall order. And that's why, to me, last night bugged me so much. When you get just to the baseball aspect of last night, that loss was irritating. That, to me, felt like a game they should have won, John Birdie. Whoa. He's playing third base, and he makes an error. It's an unearned – those are two unearned runs.
Bookie man position.
It is. That was a Jed loss last night. I hate saying that because I don't want to go full Dustin Meatball here. But that felt to me, as I texted to you, a Jed Hoyer loss because that was a management weakness. They now have several occasions where you look at third base.
Yep.
This is the curse of Alex Bregman.
Hey,
yeah, and that's
they went
a problem.
Through seven guys last year. How many are they going through right now?
They're on their way to getting to
that
point.
They're over 10.
They got Gage Workman so mixed up, he's missing ground balls for the White Sox. He doesn't know what happened to him. So, yeah, I think Paul Skenes is going to give them all he can handle today. Let's just hope they can get to the bullpen.
Well, to your point, Mully, really quick, I want to address this first. They had an issue last year. They made a trade. That trade didn't work, and then you still really didn't address it. And so that's why David is right on that one, that one kind of Jed's got to wear that one last night bit. So Skenes is 2-0 with a 2.25 ERA, 30 strikeouts in four career starts against the Cubs. I mean, we talked about in a serious manner that maybe last night's game should have been postponed and picked back up this morning. But now I am jesting and I am kidding. But I mean, if it was up to David, we would just not play the game. We would just give Paul Skenes 10 strikeouts in his career record, and we would just not do it. Because I mean, how in the world could you face Paul Skenes? I mean, gosh, geez. I mean, just cancel the game. Paul Skenes is on the mound. Ooh, boy.
In Pittsburgh. I
mean, you know, he puts his pants on one leg at a time too, David. Okay? He's a man, not a machine. And we'll see. We'll see. Bring it. Okay? Again, this is a learning moment. And I'll agree with David about this. Last night's loss, aggravating, disappointing, bang your head against the wall type of a loss. But you're not going to pack it in because you have to face Paul Skenes this afternoon.
He's a man. He's just a man. And I've loved... Listen.
Is that more Shakespeare?
No, that was Yvonne Elliman. That's from what's it called? Jesus Christ Superstar.
I was kind of quoting Rocky and Drago earlier, and you went Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah, okay. I love that song. I got to tell you. You approach him how you have been training and working to approach every pitcher. You make every pitch count. You don't let him throw the ball by you. As David's saying, you make contact. And you let him throw you seven pitches if you're going to strike out. You don't strike out on three pitches. If the guy is mowing people down, you be aware of it. You make contact. You become a thorn in his side, and you make him continue to throw pitches, and you battle in every at-bat, and then you get to the bullpen and win the game late if it has to happen that way. But, you know, you try everything you can, and you work with every skill you have to get on base, to get a guy over, to figure out a way to create a run. If you can't hit him flush, then nickel and dime the guy to death and try to get yourself create a couple of runs until you get to the bullpen.
He has given up two. I mean, he's lost twice.
He's
five earned runs against the Cardinals.
He's hardly perfect.
He is fallible.
He is not. He is not the immortal one.
Okay.
Let's go after him a little bit, but let's be aware of making him work. And that's how you work a pitch count. And that's how what they've been doing is they've been getting like really good at bats throughout the lineup. They're not relying on just the home run ball or just the guys
they grind
can,
it out
can hit it.
Especially the first four.
And that's what you do.
Yeah.
And you continue to do that
Paul
first
Skeens.
Ball all the way through it.
Paul Skeens.
Yeah, you don't acknowledge who
Paul
it is.
Skeens.
I think I have tons of respect for the guy, and I really believe he is the best young pitcher in baseball.
I agree with that.
Because if you could have anybody and you were trying to get somebody, that would be the guy you would choose. So, you know, be aware of that and, you know, give the guy a nod, but don't give up on each at bat. That's what you do.
Give a nod, but don't give up.
That's it.
There we go. I agree with that. They can beat Paul Skeens. They can beat Paul Skeens.
Go at it like Shota.
Yes.
You give him a tip of the cap, and then you beat him.
Then you beat him.
And then he can't hit you.
By the way, we come back.
10.
I've got my top five.
Oh, he does.
I've got my top five pitchers.
I created a monster.
That I would want to watch.
Okay, good. I love it. This is fun. I'll work on mine in the break. It's Molly and Haw on The Score.
He's a man. He's just a man.
You know, he puts his pants on one leg at a time too, David. Okay? He's a man, not a machine.
He's a man. He's just a man. And I've had so many.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Oh boy. So this came up because you asked if Paul Skeens was one of the top attractions in Major League Baseball.
I said I felt like this was a game.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't the Cubs involved, if there's an afternoon game, I would go home and watch this game.
I agree. If he's on the mound,
I want to watch.
I'm watching
guy pitch.
Paul Skeens, and it became, well, who else in the major leagues would you do that for? What pitchers are worth
just
reserving time
the
for?
Top five pitchers
right,
you
so
tune in for.
It's a good exercise. You think about it. It's a good thought exercise. Now, obviously, I'm a Cub fan, so Shota would be in the mix, but I'm going to remove Shota from this equation.
Oh, Shota would be fun.
This is my top five. Number five, Garrett Crochet. Give me the ball. I'm going to throw it by you with a big leg kick, and I'm just going to hit high 90s every single time out. I love the way he attacks.
I used to know him.
Number four, Shohei Ohtani, the pitcher. Not just as a hitter. There's a curiosity when Ohtani takes the mound that I can't believe that I'm watching the best hitter in baseball throw the way that he throws. And when he was a pitcher, you forget how good he was.
I just don't know that he's pitching enough to have that on your list.
Well, I guarantee you, I don't want to guarantee anything.
Guarantee.
I would guarantee you that when he makes his first start, you will find the time to watch it.
No shadow of a doubt.
So when he goes on the mound, he's in the top five by virtue of that. He's going to be the guy that is must watch when he takes the mound. So he's number four on my list. Number three, Tarik Skubal. Because best pitcher in the American League, very kind of, I don't want to say relative unknown, but still, he's not the guy that has taken baseball by storm from a celebrity standpoint. He's not a guy that I think a lot of people can even spell his name, let alone find ways to watch him pitch. But he is worth the price of admission.
Get the name right on the trophy, because that's your Cy Young.
Well, they are definitely playing at a high level too, because Javi Baez, you see him grand slam yesterday, Dustin. That was for you.
Yeah,
Tarik Skubal is number three. Number two, again, a little provincial, but he has earned it. Chris Sale. I always want to find out when Chris Sale's pitching because I will watch it.
See, the thing is, I said to you while we were just talking, I said, you know, Sal would have been on the list last year, but he doesn't make it this year. And I'm not sure that he's made it every year. But I would again question why you keep going with Sox pitchers who are traded.
I don't know, because
this is the equivalent of you like
where
shooting.
Does Carlos Rodon fall in that list?
Yeah, exactly. He's shooting peanut shells at
me.
I love Carlos Rodon.
You're not putting together a list of pitches you want to see. You want to put together a list of guys that will trigger me.
Torture you.
Did you ever write a negative word about Carlos Rodon?
I don't think I did. I loved him when they drafted him out of North Carolina State. I loved the way that they used him. I just loved the way he attacked hitters. He married a girl from Indiana.
Is Kopech number one then?
No.
By virtue of what you're doing to me?
No, I'm sorry. But I like Chris Sale. Ever since he came up, I find his delivery fascinating. How does a guy that tall and lanky with all of that movement throw the ball as hard as he throws it? He's so skinny. Have another sandwich, man. Yep. All right. And number one, this is an easy one for me. Paul Skeens is the most, he is the most compelling pitcher in baseball to me. Every time he goes out, even today against the Cubs, I expect him to go seven, to give up three hits, maybe one run, and then get to the bullpen. The Cubs are going to win. It's a close game. But I think he's going to be dealing because every time he goes to the mound, I think he's capable of throwing a no-hitter. And that's fun.
Brandon, you have a comment on that?
Where's Hunter Green? No love for Hunter Green?
Oh, my gosh. I forgot Hunter Green.
Good. That's pretty good.
He's probably six.
But I like your list, though.
You know what? That's on me. I think this is a very personal list. I think I would replace Shohei with Hunter Green.
Let's take one of the former White Sox out.
No.
Huh?
Could we change it just slightly?
All right, yeah.
Which pitcher would you actually spend money on and not flash your Baseball Writers of America card on to get into the ballpark? Hard-earned David Haw money. Not just, oh, by the way, you might know me.
You can always get a single.
I love that pass.
Yeah,
I love that pass. That's a good question. I would pay money to see Skeens. I would pay money to see Sale. I'm probably stopping there. The rest would have to be Cubs. I would have to be a Cub game.
Yeah, he'd be flashing his card.
Is this Hall?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I think that's a good question. Boy, I stopped in my tracks. Hunter Green now makes me feel I'm slightly embarrassed. I did not have him in my top five because there's not been a better pitcher probably in the National League this year than Hunter Green.
Yeah, that's true.
Hitting 100.
All right, 312-644-6767. You want to call out David on his list, which includes every ex-Sox player, feel free. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Cubs should give Carlos Rodon $100 million.
Are you bringing back my greatest hits?